You are listening to the Flash F1 podcast with Gil and Mark.
Bonjour, bienvenue dans Flash F1. Je suis Gil avec Marc, mon co-animateur. Hello, welcome to Flash F1. I'm Gil along with Marc, my co-host, and this is where we share with our listeners our post-race discussions and some Formula One news and facts that lead up to the race weekend. Marc, how was my 8th grade French on this intro?
That was really good.
Thank you.
You know, I braced myself because you normally have a borderline inappropriate introduction, but that was really good. Well done.
Thank you. Everything about this race was kind of boring. Caramba, what else can I say?
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think a lot of the press and the media that cover this race would agree with us. So I think on that, let's jump right to our track review.
Let's do it.
Now for the track review.
Despite the fact that this particular weekend wasn't incredibly exciting and the race itself was lacking in, drama or really any semblance of entertainment, I think it's pretty important to kind of back up a little bit and talk about the history of the French Grand Prix. France, much like the United Kingdom, much like England, Germany, really is the birthplace of motorsports. France today continues to play an important role in the world of motorsports. Obviously, there's a number of manufacturers that are based in that country. The country obviously hosts Le Mans. It has a close connection to Monaco. But curiously, despite the fact that Formula One had really had a toehold in this country for the better part of 100 years, since 2008, there was actually no race in France at all, which is pretty crazy when you think about how embedded and how much of a part of the world of motorsports France is. The race from about, I think, 1991 until 2008 was held outside a sleepy village at a circuit called Manicours. It wasn't a particularly well-loved event simply because it was so far from a major urban core. But from 91 till 2008, like I mentioned, the event was held near Manicours. In 2008, the race was effectively halted or paused, in part because the track itself needed a fairly significant financial makeover, and also because the world was just slipping into that global recession that saw obviously some pretty significant changes in the sport. We saw obviously Honda walk away, Toyota walk away. We saw a number of changes from a venue's perspective. But for the better part of a decade, there was no event in France. Despite the immense history that this country had had with motorsports and Formula One, there was no event. Now, in December of 2016, it was announced that Formula One was going to return to France, which was very, very exciting, both for people in France because there is such a huge hotbed of motorsports fans, but also for people outside of France and also for people within the Formula One circus, because it's good to be competing and racing in places where there is a real passion for motorsports. So it was announced in December 2016 that Formula One was going to return to France, and it did. And they elected to go to the Paul Ricard circuit, or Circuit de Paul Ricard, in the very, very southern coast, so very close to Marseille. In fact, this circuit, and I looked this up this morning because I always knew it was pretty close to Monaco, is only a 2-hour drive from Monaco. So within the course of a month, you have two high-profile Formula One events in the south of France, or in the coastline on the south of France, which is kind of interesting. From a track perspective, it's not a particularly interesting track, although I want to kind of get to that in a little bit. I want to talk a little bit more about the history, but a couple of interesting stats. The most dominant competitor, the most dominant driver in the history of the Formula One Grand Prix, the Formula One experience in France, regardless or independent of what particular track it might have been held at, is Michael Schumacher. He's actually won the French Grand Prix 8 times. I believe all 8 of those victories probably came at Manicours, based on the fact that that's where it was run from 91 to 2008, where he was kind of the principal driver. Ferrari's won 17 different times there. Interestingly, the French Grand Prix has been held at 16 different circuits across France, which is interesting. And then I think finally, another interesting thing here was in 2002, and this is perhaps relevant simply because of the experience that we've got this year with that really dominant Mercedes team. But in 2002, Michael Schumacher celebrated the Drivers' Championship at Manicours in France. It was the 11th race of the season, which is mind-boggling that halfway through the season, he and the Ferrari team were so dominant, they were able to celebrate the championship, which effectively meant that the rest of the races that year were lame duck. But we returned to France in 2018. Last year was the first year back. We return at Circuit Paul Ricard. A couple of things about this track that are kind of interesting to know. One, it's in the foothills of the mountains, and it's basically carved out of a plateau, these rolling plateaus. It's a short drive from the coast, so for a lot of people that do go to this event, they stay in the coastal cities and the coastal villages, so by all accounts, it's a beautiful place. The track is typically scorching hot by June, July, which means that the track temperatures are even hotter. But in terms of a track, it's not particularly exciting, and one of the things that I think a lot of the viewers will notice is there's a lot of blue and red paint, and that's really designed to disguise the runoff areas. So purpose-built modern Formula One tracks have huge runoff areas because it creates a lot more safety for the drivers, but the runoff areas are usually a combination of grass and gravel or sand because the cars will go into that gravel, they'll get caught, they'll slow down quickly. If there's damage to the cars, it doesn't really matter because all they really care about are the drivers and the safety of the drivers. In this track, there's tons of runoff areas as well, but it's all paved. And the reason for that is that because this is a very, very, very popular amateur track, so a lot of weekend drivers and hobbyists bring their carts, they bring their cars, they built their project vehicles down here, and they race during the week and on weekends. And the challenge is that if the runoff areas for those folks are gravel, it's really expensive to get the cars out, and it's also really expensive for these hobbyists to repair cars that have been into sand and gravel. So the runoff areas are always paved at this track, and they try to disguise this with a lot of that kind of wavy blue and red paint that you can probably see in a lot of the photos and a lot of the video. But aside from that, it's not a particularly exciting track, which we saw this weekend. Please.
Yeah, no, in lieu of the gravel and the sand and the grass that you had mentioned, the different colors of the runoff, the paved area, are also different textures.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I didn't know that.
The blue and the red are different textures, so it's a little bit more of a rougher texture to kind of slow them down or give them a different type of feel when they drive over top of it, so they know that they're in a off track.
Interesting. So my assumption had always been that, quite frankly, you know what, this is an event that's going to be broadcast on TV to tens of millions of people. We just need to make that kind of plain pavement look a little bit prettier. So it's interesting that it actually serves a functional purpose as well, but that's pretty cool. So different textures, different kind of grit depending on the color, which helps the drivers identify where they are on the track. Yeah, pretty cool. Yeah, so other than that, it's not a particularly exciting race. Last year, the event was, and you wouldn't have noticed this as a fan watching on television, but by all accounts, it was an extremely popular event in terms of attendance, and I think the organizers had done a very poor job of coordinating getting people in and out of the track, and apparently there was tailbacks, and a lot of people spent 4, 5, or 6 hours trying to travel distances as short as 10 or 20 kilometers, and again, it was just as difficult when they were getting out, so a lot of people missed much of the festivities. By all accounts, the organizers had committed to making some really significant improvements this year in terms of the logistics of getting people in and out of the course. So that's kind of Paul Ricard in a nutshell. The track itself is just under 6 kilometers. It's 5.82 kilometers, I believe, and it's 15 turns. Now, prior to 2018, the track had hosted Formula One prior. It hosted the Formula One circus from 85 to 90, as well as 71, 73, 75, 76, 69, 78, 80, 82, 83, and again, as I mentioned, 85 to 90. So it has some history with the sport. Obviously, prior to regaining the right to host a Formula One event in 2018, it underwent some pretty significant updates in terms of fan accommodation, the grandstands, the pits, and things like that. But overall, it's not a race that's particularly compelling from a driver perspective. And I think as we get into discussion around free practice, qualifying, and the race itself, you'll realize pretty quickly it's not a track that's particularly exciting. Any other thoughts just around the track and the event before we jump into kind of a recap of the weekend?
No, I think you've covered everything. It is what it is. It's open, very colorful track. Just wish there was a little bit more excitement on this race, but we'll get into that.
Yeah, and I think one of the things a lot of people have questioned is, hey, you know, it's great to be back in France, but is this the right track? And is it the right track for a couple of reasons? One, it's only 2 hours from Monaco, and two, it's a long way away from Paris. So it's pretty close to Marseille. But if you're in Marseille, you know what? Monaco is just a train ride away. It's a couple of hours. It's a camping trip away. But if you live in central or northern France, this is a long trek. But either way, the gate attendance so far has been really spectacular. It's just not an event that's showing a lot of excitement for the drivers.
Yeah, it's just funny that based on the distance that you mentioned, they break it up with Canada right in between.
Yeah, so I thought about that earlier too. So you go to Monaco, you go halfway across the world to Canada, and then you come right back to this circuit here in southern France. So it's really interesting that they do it that way. Like, I kind of get it that you probably don't want to go Monaco to the French Grand Prix and Paul Ricard. Like, I kind of get that because it makes it hard to sell tickets and things like that, but break it up across the season. Like, maybe do Monaco at the beginning and then maybe do Paul Ricard 2 or 3 months later. That's really interesting.
Yeah, or maybe they just do like a soft transition if we go into Canada and they speak French there and it kind of leads into the France one. So
yeah, that's interesting too, that you have three French events back to back to back. Either way, all three are very well attended and the fans at all three events are really enthusiastic. So you know what? If it works for the fans and it works for the promoter, that's great. It's just not particularly exciting on TV.
Follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Search for Flash F1 Official.
All right, welcome back. It's been a couple of weeks since we've done a podcast. Well, maybe not a couple of weeks, but a little bit of time. And I think we've both been pretty busy. Gil, I gotta sidetrack this podcast for a couple of minutes.
Sure.
And share some kind of interesting updates. Nothing groundbreaking, but a couple of weeks ago, I had the opportunity to visit Washington, D.C. for the first time. By the way, if you haven't been, it's a fantastic city. Northern Virginia is awesome. Great food, great people. The cost of admission to a lot of the museums and things like that are totally free, but overall, it was a great trip, and I highly recommend it for anybody. On the way back, we had the opportunity to stop in Toronto, which is a city I'm really familiar with. My wife's really familiar with. We stayed with some of her friends, fantastic people. They were really, really great hosts. But while we were there, and we've kind of sidetracked a couple of these conversations in the past, especially when we talked to Tim Horanian, when we talked to Nicholas Latifi about the Toronto Raptors. And for those of you outside of Canada, the mainstream news, and I'm not even talking sports, but the mainstream news in Canada for the better part of the past 2 months has been dominated by the fact that the Toronto Raptors have had this unbelievable playoff run. And for those of you that don't know, about a week and a half ago, they won the 2019 NBA Finals. They won the championship. They're bringing the Larry O'Brien trophy home. They're going to get their rings this fall. The country went bananas. Something in the order of 1.5 to 2 million people broke out for the parade. The city shut down. The TV ratings for the Toronto Raptors were unlike anything the country has ever seen. So we're very, very excited. I should probably cue up the Drake royalty sounds right now because I may or may not be playing some Drake music in the background when this podcast actually drops. So cue the licensing royalty drop. But what was kind of interesting is Sarah and I actually had the immense opportunity to attend Game 5 of the NBA Finals.
So yes, that's right.
Game 1 and 2 were in Toronto. Toronto split those with Golden State, so they won 1. Golden State won Game 2. Game 3 and 4 were in Golden State. We watched those while we were in the U.S. on TV. And then Game 5 was in Toronto on a Monday night. So we had the opportunity to go to Game 5, and the outcome being that if they won, we would be in downtown Toronto.
Celebrating.
Celebrating when the city would have had this immense breakout. So we went to the game. It was a really good experience, and curiously, or maybe not curiously, but Nicholas Latifi was also in attendance. So we were sitting basically center court, but in the 300 level, so the upper bowl of the arena. Again, still great sight lines. He was sitting courtside next to the Golden State Warriors bench. In fact, I think at some point he Instagrammed a photo of Kevin Durant stretching before he took the floor. But we could actually see him, and it kind of DM'd back and forth with him a little bit during the game, like, hey man, enjoy the game. And he said the same thing. But interestingly, when we were leaving, when we were actually walking out of the arena, unfortunately they lost, although they went on to win the next game in Golden State. When we were walking out of the arena, I looked left and his mom was standing just feet from me. And my wife kind of grabs my shoulder and points, and his dad, and it was obvious to pick out his dad because his dad was wearing this really bright white blazer. His dad was walking down the street about 5 feet in front of his wife. So yeah, we walked out of the arena and we literally almost bumped into them. I didn't want to be that super creepy guy, although it definitely crossed my mind.
I would have been.
I know
I am
you
that creepy
been.
Guy because Nicholas Latifi's mother mother follows us on Instagram, so she's really great.
Yeah, you know what? It did cross my mind briefly, like, hi, I'm Mark from the Formula One podcast. And she's like, I have no idea who you are, what you're talking about. But it was kind of cool to see them. You know, we talk a lot about the fact that both of their families are well-established, very wealthy, but they're both super down to earth. But they're just walking amongst the crowds, exiting the arena, no crazy security, not walking into a limo, just walking out with the crowds. I thought was pretty cool. But yeah, it was cool to be at the arena while he was there enjoying the same game, and to just about just cross paths with his parents coming out was pretty neat, especially since the Flash F1 podcast has had a little bit of fun banter with his mom on Instagram as well. So for me, that's about the other only update. The other thing was too, when we were in DC, Sarah's uncle, who we were staying with, had given us the keys to his brand new Volkswagen Tiguan to drive around when we were there, and we really liked it. And when we got to Toronto, we had the opportunity to rent one, so we got to drive another one. But we liked it so much, and because we were in the need for a more family-friendly car, and to be totally honest, like, I grew up driving fast cars and bikes. For me, I would almost rather not have a car than have like a minivan. But the Tiguan's a pretty good little crossover, and it's kind of sporty. So we got back, we decided, hey, let's buy one. We looked around a little bit, talked to Gil. Of course, Gil just happens to know the sales manager at the Volkswagen dealer nearest us.
I got a guy.
Man, you got a guy for everything, son. So we knew him. We managed to go and hook up. He hooked us up with a great price. So shout out to Jay at Regency Volkswagen in Coquitlam, British Columbia, suburb of Vancouver. So shout out, great buying experience, and we love the car.
Wow, we're doing shout outs now.
Again, these aren't paid advertisements yet, and hopefully we get to that stage. But yeah, rocking a new Volkswagen Tiguan, so it's nice to have a new car for once. But that's about really, I think, all the updates for me. Anything else going on with you, my friend? I hear you might be adding to your collection of Scions.
Yeah, I'm looking to find a white one. I've been trying to find a white one, so that'll be number four if I end up picking it up. But you know, congratulations to you and your new vehicle. Jay is a great guy, and I'm glad he's taking care of you.
Yeah, it was a great experience overall. Very happy. And we love the car too. It's like, it's a perfect compromise between kind of an entry level domestic or Japanese car and something that's a little bit more premium, like a Jag or an Audi or a Land Rover. And you know, to be honest, we looked at the Land Rover Discovery, which was my favorite going in. We looked at the Range Rover Evoque. Both of them, price-wise, like the price of admission is pretty good. Like they start around, say, 45, 50K. But as soon as you add any options at all, you want something other than a 13-inch steel wheel, man, like you add 20K to the price. So they got too expensive too quickly. And the Volkswagen was just a really great value. And I can't help but think that Volkswagen's working hard to get people back on their lots after the whole diesel scandal a few years ago. But obviously, it's a great car and a great experience so far. But that said, I think we've burnt enough time. Maybe we jump into the race. So
definitely.
We talked earlier, we alluded to the fact that it was a pretty boring race.
Yeah.
Maybe the days leading up were a little bit more interesting. So I'll quickly recap and feel free to interject if you have any thoughts. Free practice one on Friday, hot track temperatures, some tire graining issues, people complaining a little bit about the tire graining, partly because of the compound of the tires that were maybe brought to this race, maybe because it's only the second year there. Some sections of the track have fresh pavement, so there's some, I would say, discrepancies between surface type and surface texture from one place to another. But ultimately, free practice won. You saw Hamilton dominate. Bottas was second. Leclerc was third, and pay attention to that. Verstappen was fourth. Vettel was fifth. Lance Stroll, not maybe terrible, he finished 13th. And what was really interesting, of course, was Latifi, for the second straight race weekend, had the opportunity to go out in free practice one. By circuit standards, by championship standards, it wasn't a great time. By Williams standards, it's right up next to what we would expect from Russell, although he also did dominate Kubica. So he put down a much, 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 much faster time than he did. And Grosjean had some mechanical issues and ultimately finished last. And it just makes me wonder what Latifi would do in another car, because I think the times that he's been putting into practice the last two weekends are very close to George Russell. So I can't help but think that he's ready to go. Licensing and points aside, I think he's ready to go.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts from free practice one?
We just talked about it before, about how Latifi, you know, how he would fare in a Formula One vehicle. It's just all timing. So, you know, if he gets into Formula One seat for next year, I'm really interested to see that.
I just love the fact that he's getting these reps right now. So it doesn't matter if it's a Williams car, because at the end of the day, this car is a second or 2 seconds slower than the rest of the field. But if you're just getting in that car to become familiar with, and he talked about this, the traction and the grip and the braking, like, he's getting those reps in now. So whether whether it's with an improved Williams car next year or whether it's with a different team, at least the learning curve at the beginning of next year is going to be much, much easier. Because
the transition will be much smoother for him because he's familiar with it.
Exactly. Yeah. So for me, it doesn't matter if he's driving a Williams or not. The only other thing that I should mention, just kind of on the topic of Kubica, is it looks like the company that is kind of his primary sponsor, and I think it's Polish oil company, I believe they're called PKN Orlen, they've made clear that it's doubtful that they're going to return to Williams this year, and I believe they brought 10 million euro in sponsorship to kind of help secure Kubica's seat, but by all accounts they won't be returning next year, which kind of to me indicates that Kubica, if he makes it through the rest of the season, won't be back next year. Free practice 2, same day. Hamilton had a bit of an issue. So he was on the track and at one point lost his rear end, rejoined the track, and this I think was on turn 3, rejoined the track, and Verstappen had to take evasive action to avoid him. So Hamilton recognized the error. He put up his hand. He waved like, hey, that one's my bad. The stewards were to investigate, but I guess based on the fact that there was no further news, that nothing really came of that. But maybe that's really the only thing of notice to talk about. Bottas finished first, had the fastest time, followed by Hamilton. Leclerc again, so Leclerc's first in free practice 1, third in free practice 2. Vettel was 4th, Norris was 5th, Verstappen was 6th, and Stroll, really, really, really disappointing, finished 18th after finishing 13th in free practice 1. And then finally, free practice 3, Bottas put in a blazing fast time on a blazing fast track, followed by Hamilton, Leclerc again. So Leclerc just chomping at the bit of those McLarens, but best of the rest. Mercedes chomping at their bit, best of the rest. And then Vettel was 4th, Verstappen was 5th, and then Stroll once again, a really, really disappointing 18th.
Yeah, I couldn't get out of Q1.
Yeah, and maybe that's the perfect transition. So we look at qualifying. For the 12th straight weekend, he can't get out of Q1, which is shocking. And what's really interesting, we'll talk about this in a couple minutes, but once again, he has soft practice, poor qualifying, and then he makes up a ton of spots in the race. So, and I think Tim Horan spoke to this, sometimes a driver is just a really great racer, but isn't a great qualifier, and this maybe seems to be the case. So prior to qualifying, Ferrari came forward and basically admitted that, hey, look, some of the upgrades that we brought to this race, and you and I talked about this, they brought a new wing, they brought new end plates and a brand new floor. Some of those upgrades weren't working the way that maybe they expected them to. In fact, they actually brought the old wing as well so they could do a little bit of A-B comparison.
Because the wing changes that they made was they took off some pieces, they moved some pieces around, put it through the wind tunnel, and this is what they came up with.
Yeah, and I think what they were trying to achieve was a little bit more outwash, but ultimately when they went into qualifying, it sounds as though the floor plates, the floor of the car was changed back to the previous spec. So obviously the upgrades, the dynamics created by these upgrades weren't something they were particularly happy with going into qualifying. So we go into qualifying, Hamilton lays down a blistering fast track, or blisteringly fast
time.
Lap, 128.32, so that's the fastest lap this circuit has ever seen, which is fantastic. Ultimately, he gets provisional pole and then ultimately qualifies on pole, followed by Bottas. So same thing we saw in free practice 1, 2, and 3, Mercedes, 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 and then Leclerc, 3rd once again. So again, once again, best of the rest after the Mercedes pack, and once again, for the 4th time this weekend, finishing ahead of his teammate Sebastian Vettel. In fact, Sebastian Vettel finished 7th in qualifying, and there were some circumstances around that, but really a bad weekend leading up to the race for Vettel. Verstappen qualified 4th, Lando Norris qualified 5th, Sainz qualified 6th, so a really great weekend for McLaren. Vettel 7th, as we noticed, and Stroll doesn't get out of Q1 and qualifies 19th.
Was it 19th? I thought it was 18th, but yeah.
Yeah, so I think there were some penalties that ultimately pushed him up a little bit, but he qualified 19. Where he started on the grid was obviously a little bit different. Yeah. So that was kind of the circumstances and events leading up to the race. Maybe you want to walk us through your thoughts on the race.
Well, the race is, like we've been talking about, is pretty soft, pretty boring. Not a lot of excitement going on. Right off the first lap, Perez goes off track in turn 4, and later down the line gets a 5-second penalty. Wow. And we've been talking about this. I'm like, what's with all these penalties? Yeah. With all these 5-second penalties, it's really hurting the drivers. Understandably, he won't be able to get in the same position. You know, everyone's scrambling around for position. Yeah. There's got to be a better way than to impede these drivers' performance instead of putting in, adding all these 5-second penalties. What do you think, Mark?
I totally agree. And I don't know if it's something they can do midstream, like partway through a season. I don't know if this is kind of a FIA issue or if this is a Formula One issue or it's a Liberty issue. But ultimately, when you see this many penalties, ultimately what it's going to do is discourage drivers from taking risks. And it's ultimately going to make the racing even more boring, because if a driver's in a position where, hey, look, you know what, I could make a lunge into this corner and attempt an overtake, but in the back of my head, I'm thinking, look, the risk of me doing that isn't that I'll necessarily make contact. It's that I'm going to get a penalty, so I'm not going to do it. I'm just going to protect my position. So ultimately, you get this race where, hey, you know, it's a drag race off of the green light at the beginning out of the grid. But ultimately, after that, everyone just kind of falls into line and they're like, hey, I don't want to make any moves because ultimately, I don't want to cost myself a penalty.
Yeah, in comparison to this race and with Vettel's penalty, Perez did everything that he was supposed to do. Instead of getting into an accident, he goes off track and then he rejoins, but following the proper off-track circuit.
Yeah.
And rejoins and then is investigated and gets a 5-second penalty for position advantage or whatever the case may be. Completely different from Vettel's penalty, where first off, I don't think Vettel should have gotten a penalty. And we had a difference on that on the last podcast, where the short distance grass that he took, you know, the control of his vehicle, making sure that he doesn't crash, yet the investigation or the Ferrari's petition and the data and the facts that they presented to the stewards regarding Vettel's in cockpit controls, yeah, or any, yeah, of the views that they were pointing out to, and totally dismissed Ferrari's petition for the review, is completely different. You know, different situation, but you know, ultimately the penalty to the drivers impedes their driving ability and their judgment on the track.
Yeah, like it does both. Saying. It does, yeah, both. Impedes their judgment because they're going to make different decisions, and ultimately just makes for a less entertaining race ultimately. So, and that's the problem, because it's kind of compounded by two things. One, the drivers are afraid to take risks and do exciting things on track for fear of getting a penalty. But at the other side, the disparity in the sport between Ferrari, Mercedes and everybody else is so huge that they can't really compete with those teams anyway, so it makes it even less exciting, which is why I think 2021 is kind of this unicorn state that we're all eagerly waiting for, which we'll get to in a couple of minutes when we talk about news and gossip. But yeah, the sport needs to do some stuff, and I know Liberty is invested in improving the sport. They're not interested in the status quo, but you're right, the flurry of penalties that we've seen just, it really, really suffocates the sport from an excitement perspective. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, and then we'll just talk about the Ricciardo penalty later on. But going through the rest of the race, with this being a short amount of laps for the French Grand Prix, we have Ricciardo lap 17. He pits early, starting the undercut, chain, yep, reaction. Really not too much excitement there. And then Magnussen follows. We've got really nothing much more towards in the middle of the race.
No. I
don't know. It's really dry.
Yeah.
We get into, I guess, coming towards the last half, back end of the race, where we've got Grosjean, lap 47, retired the car, had, yeah, to do a DNF because, yeah, of mechanical issues.
Yeah.
You want to jump in on anything with, or is there really nothing much?
I don't even know what else to speak to. It was a pretty generic race. And if you're in North America, especially the West Coast, it was a hard race to stay awake for. Obviously, the start. And one of the things Formula One's really good for is oftentimes when you have those 20 cars grouped closely together and those lights turn green and everyone drag races off the line, sometimes you get some excitement in the first couple of corners. It was a clean start. There really wasn't anything there. To your point, you had the Grosjean retirement. Ricciardo went into pit a little bit early. There was a penalty early on. But aside from that, there was really no excitement in this race. It was, and I get it that this is a dedicated circuit, but it's kind of like they were just running around in a parking lot. It was just a lot of pavement. It was a sea of pavement. Hamilton had a great start because he qualified well. Bottas had a great start, and there was never any question that those two drivers were going to finish 1-2.
What else do we have? We've got the thing that I'm happy about is McLaren. In the past, has always done really poorly. This race, they're in the top 10. We've got Norris. He ended up
ninth.
Ninth?
Yep.
Oh yeah, with the new shuffle.
But, yeah, with the shuffle, which we'll talk to in a couple of minutes. Some breaking news there, but he ultimately finished ninth.
He got passed on the last lap by a couple of other drivers.
Yeah,
I think it was Raikkonen, Hülkenberg.
Such a shame.
Yeah, and ended up with 10th, but with now Ricciardo's penalty that he calls out himself.
You know what? Just call it out. What happened? So Ricciardo finished 7th, so it was a double points finish for Renault at their home race because of Renault, of course, is a French company. So he finishes 7th. But breaking news about an hour, 2 hours after the race, what do we see?
Ricciardo calls himself out where he goes off track and all four wheels go off track.
Yeah.
And he gains an advantage by passing the other two drivers.
Yeah.
Giving him like a 10-second penalty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was interesting. So Formula One, and this was breaking news, and we couldn't even find it on the stories, but my wife had called out the fact that, hey, look, Formula One on their Instagram story is calling out the fact that Ricciardo is being hammered or hit with 2 5-second penalties for an illegal overtake. So they posted an Instagram video showing this, but this is really funny. So they posted this like, hey, look, here it is. Last lap drama, Lando Norris nursing mechanical issues on a McLaren, loses 3 places on last lap to finish P10, a valiant effort from the rookie earns a driver of the day, blah, 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 blah. But ultimately, Ricciardo gets some penalties because of some illegal overtakes. And it's funny because he also goes ahead and comments on those stories by saying, hey, thanks for creating some excitement, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, so ultimately he gets hit with 2 5-second penalties, drops from 7th to, I 11th. Think, 11th. Yeah. So he drops out of the points, which ultimately moves, I think that moves Gasly into the points because he wasn't originally in the points.
That's right. That's right.
But ultimately for McLaren, to your point, and what a great success story McLaren's been this year. Carlos Sainz finishes 6th and his teammate Lando Norris finishes 9th. So a double points finish for McLaren. They're really, really starting to pull it together, which is great to see. And it's also interesting because despite the fact that they're a customer team to Renault and they're using the same power unit, they're seeing way better results than Renault themselves.
Really good. Yeah, they've advanced so much this year. It's really mind-boggling that since they've left Honda, and they've gotten to the Renault unit, that they've been doing really well. It's just, you know, funny enough that if they were doing this with Alonso, when Alonso was driving with Renault it would just be a totally different game.
It would be really interesting. And you're right, that divorce. So you had McLaren partnered with Honda and you had Red Bull partnered with Renault, and both teams have a really ugly divorce and they basically switch engine providers. So Renault moves to McLaren, which was an interesting partnership. They've had their best season in 4 or 5 years. And then Honda moves to Red Bull, and Red Bull continues to perform like they did the year prior, and Verstappen continues to pile up the points and fight for podiums, which is really interesting to see. So it kind of worked out for everybody.
And what I'm trying to get at is that if Alonso stayed in Formula One, because he left, he was just frustrated and done with McLaren and Honda and decided to try something different. If he had stayed and see with McLaren to see where putting a championship driver in a McLaren car today, how much better McLaren would be in the standings for the 2019 season.
It would be interesting. And we've got a little bit of Fernando Alonso news that we'll share during our news and gossip section. So I don't want to break into that now, but I totally agree. It would be pretty interesting. Other thoughts on the race? So Hamilton dominates. He absolutely crushes in quali. There's never any doubt that he's going to win this race. Bottas finishes 2nd. Leclerc finishes 3rd. So Leclerc finishes 3rd in free practice 1, 2, and 3. He finishes 3rd in qualifying. He finishes 3rd in the race. So literally there's nothing more that he can do. He dominates the field minus Mercedes. Ultimately, Max Verstappen in that Honda-powered Red Bull that we're talking about finishes 4th. Vettel finishes 5th. So makes up a couple spots after qualifying.
Then we have Sainz
6th. Yep.
Raikkonen.
Yep.
And then we've got Hülkenberg 8th.
Yep.
And like we said before, with the penalties that Ricciardo took, we've got Lando Norris 9th. We've got Gasly in the points at 10. And Ricciardo dropped down to 11 because of his overtake.
Sergio Perez finishes 12th. And this was interesting. So despite his horrible, horrible qualifying, Lance Stroll finishes 13th. So he's out of the points, but he made up a ton of spots again.
4 or 5 spots. Yeah. It was really good.
So it proves that, you know what, they really are a middle of the pack car and he's a capable driver. If he just had a great qualifying session and he was able to start 10, 11, 12.
Can you imagine what position he'd been in? Yeah. Moving, advancing that much in the race from where he was to now if he was in a better position at the start of the race, where he would end up on the upper half of the race.
Totally. So if he qualifies 12th, maybe he finishes 7th or 8th. Yeah. If he qualifies 11th, maybe he finishes 6th or 7th. So they would really be able to stack up some points because he's a great racer. He's just not a great, and this is what Tim Haraney spoke to, he's just not a great qualifier, if you know what I mean.
So I think the team itself, Racing Point, needs to do something to get Stroll in a better position during qualifying. If they can get him in the Q2 and see where he ends up in after Q2, then when it comes to race day, that boom, he's advancing and get those points for the team.
There was a point this year where it looked like Racing Point might possibly finish fourth in the Constructors' Championship. I don't think there's a really any chance of that happening right now. They're currently sixth after Renault and McLaren. They've really struggled to pick up points over the last four or five races. But you're right, if they could qualify a little bit better, they could definitely start cashing in on some of those points for sure. And then finally, I think the other things to call out here, Kubica, not a great race. Russell, not in the points once again, but I think that's really based on the car. And for Alfa Romeo, Giovinazzi, no points again. So his pointless streak continues. The only three drivers this year not to pick up a point is Giovinazzi, Russell, and of course Kubica, which we spoke to. And it's also interesting what a year Kimi's having for Alfa Romeo versus the year that Giovinazzi's having. And we'll speak to this, but once again, Kimi Raikkonen finishes in the points. He gets that Alfa Romeo to seventh. Year to date, he's picked up, I think, and I'm just actually looking up the standings right now, but so far this year, Kimi has picked up, I'm not sure how many points he's got this year, but he's definitely cashed some in. But Giovinazzi still no points year to date, which is kind of interesting. Any other thoughts on the race?
Yeah, I just want to just, again, point out the crappy luck Grosjean's been having this first half of the season.
Yeah.
He's always had either some retirement, mechanical issue, you know, the first few races, and then now this race where he had to retire and DNF.
Yeah.
Right at the end of the race, pretty much.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Raikkonen, 17 points this year. So he has almost as many points this year as the Racing Point team does, which is crazy because Giovinazzi's picked up zero. So again, it really speaks sometimes to the fact that people will make that comment, especially people that aren't familiar with Formula One, that, hey, look, it's not about the driver. It's about the car. But you take these two drivers, Kimi Raikkonen and Giovinazzi, you put them in the exact same car. One of the drivers created 0 points this year, and Kimi Raikkonen, who's about 87,000 years old, continues to cash in points week after week. And you and I also talked about the fact that, man, what could he have done last year if there weren't any team orders around Ferrari?
Oh, of course. Yeah. Of course.
Yeah, cool. Any other thoughts on the race itself? We spoke to the fact that, hey, a late call on some penalties for Ricciardo kind of changed the race order, changed the points distribution. Renault doesn't get that double points finish despite this being a home race. Any other thoughts? Hamilton takes the win once again. Easy win.
Yeah, no. McLaren, really happy for McLaren's win. Oh, Mercedes.
Mercedes win,
made that same mistake again.
Yeah, but McLaren, great weekend nonetheless.
Yeah, McLaren had a great weekend. We're both Mercedes fans. We're both Hamilton fans. So great to see that. Again, just more excitement for the fans. A little bit more, passing, a little bit more, just engagement from the other drivers.
Yep.
You know, Mercedes is just walking away, you know, one and two all the time. So as much as that's great for Mercedes fans, I think just the fan base alone, just watching the sport, we need a bit more engagement, a bit more excitement. These penalties are really just killing everything.
Yep, totally agree.
Instagram and Twitter. Search for Flash F1 Official.
It's been a while since we've broken out and dusted off the F1 news and gossip section, but we've got a couple of things to cover this week. And Gil, I definitely want your thoughts on all of these. Fresh off of a repeat win at Le Mans, Fernando Alonso has announced, and there's kind of two parallel stories here. On the one hand, in questions with reporters, he's basically made clear that, hey, look, I'm willing to return to Formula One in 2020, but I'm only going to go to a top-tier team, so a Ferrari or a Mercedes, and I think it's pretty doubtful that that's going to happen. But simultaneously, despite the fact that the rest of his summer is pretty much free now that his Indy commitments and his Le Mans commitment are done, McLaren has also made it pretty clear that they have no plans to put him back in their car this year for practice, for testing, for any purpose whatsoever. And I got to think it's because, and we talked about this earlier in the podcast, McLaren's having really a breakout year. Everything that they're doing with Renault is working. We know that as great a driver as Fernando is, maybe there's a little bit of diva-esque-ness there, and maybe they don't want him to come in and disrupt what's working with their current drivers. But your thoughts on this one, you know, Fernando saying, hey, I want to come back. I will come back, but only to a top tier team. And McLaren saying like, hey, we're good, man. We're good. We like what's going on right now.
Yeah. And I totally agree with you about the diva thing. Congratulations to Alonso for winning Le Mans.
Yeah. Great call. Yeah. Big props.
But what I'm thinking is that he's trying to set himself up to be already in a championship or a really good position by only saying that he will only return to a top tier team. You know, fans of Formula One would want to see Fernando Alonso come back, but with his diva-esque attitude, and he left McLaren because of the fact that they weren't doing well. He was really frustrated and done with them. For him to come back, it would probably only benefit a lower tier team, I would think.
I totally agree. Like, you look at Ferrari 1, Ferrari's not replacing Leclerc with anybody. Leclerc is their future. So let's say something crazy happened and Vettel got frustrated and left. I don't think Ferrari's going to put him in that team because his expectation is that I'm the primary driver and I want team orders and I want to win. And I don't think they want to do anything to upset Leclerc, so I can't see it happening there. We don't really know about Bottas's future and where he's going to be long term, but say he left Mercedes, I also don't think there's a chance in hell that Fernando Alonso is going to be partnered with Hamilton again, because we all remember what happened the last time the two of them drove together, and that was a disaster. That was a total war. We talk about Hamilton and Rosberg. You need to go back and look at Hamilton and Alonso. So it's obviously not going to be those two teams. Probably not going to be a Renault. Probably not going to be a Racing Point. Probably not going to be, we know it's not going to be McLaren, so I don't really know where it's going to be. So maybe he's just making clear that, hey, look, nobody wants me. I don't want to admit it. I'm just going to say it's got to be a top tier team, knowing that that's unlikely. It's kind of a political way of saying that, hey, I'm probably not going to race in Formula One again.
Yeah. If anything else, I could probably see him in a Haas or or a Renault or something like that.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, it doesn't look like we'll see Fernando next year, but based on some of the great up and coming drivers that we have this year and some of the things that are going with McLaren, maybe that's not necessarily a terrible thing for the sport. One other interesting news story, and this isn't necessarily official, but earlier on in the season, we talked a little bit about the fact that Ferrari had some fairly controversial partnerships when it came to, I would say, advertising on the car. Officially, the team's name is actually Scuderia Ferrari Mission Winnow. For the last couple of races, they've actually been officially called Scuderia Ferrari, and they've actually taken the Mission Winnow branding off of the car. So the branding itself wasn't on the car in Australia, which is when this really came to light the first time, because of some legislation in that country that prevents this type of nefarious advertising. Yeah. And it was off in Canada, and it was off again in France. It looks as though, and there's some stories starting to break, that they may strip it from the car for the rest of the season, which may be, quite honestly, an acknowledgement that, look, the world's picked up on what's really going on here, and Mission Winnow's intents aren't necessarily what they say they are on their really ambiguous website, but ultimately, that at the end of the day, they're just trying to promote e-cigarettes and other types of products that are really targeted towards youth that might not otherwise touch a tobacco-style product. So it's possible, and it's also the same for the Ducati MotoGP team that also bears the Mission Winnow Racing advertising. It's very possible that that may be stripped from the cars for the rest of the year, and in place of the Mission Winnow branding, the Ferrari could just have celebratory signage recognizing their 90th anniversary. But it's interesting that it could be gone.
Yeah, and with the changes that Formula One's been making these past 5 years to bring in a more inclusive audience, and the look and feel of Formula One, they're trying to change. Like, they're getting rid of anything of that sort.
Yeah,
gone are the days are the grid girls.
Grid Girls,
The advertisement for cigarettes and whatnot.
Tobacco advertising.
Yeah, if you look at Formula One now in comparison to like 10 years ago, a completely different look and feel for the sport.
Yeah, and it's something that I think is being picked up at the societal level. I think people in general were a little bit ignorant to the health issues or the potential health implications of these e-cigarette and vaping products. And I think originally when you began to see them, people generally accepted them as, hey, it's not great, but it's a better alternative than cigarettes. But I think what's happened is youth, for the most part, especially in North America, have really distanced themselves from traditional tobacco products. But for some reason, vaping and e-cigarettes have made a real inroads into kind of youth culture. And people who may never have touched a tobacco product are finding these compelling. And I think school districts and I think cities, municipalities, provinces, and states and federal governments are beginning to see the dangers because it's being recognized as a really cool product. So I think that Mission Winnow's position here is, hey, look, we as a Philip Morris, as a tobacco manufacturer, recognize that tobacco is dead. We're just going to try and soften that transition to vaping and e-cigarette products, knowing that our target demo is youth. So I'm actually happy to see that maybe this stuff is going to get ripped off these cars, because I think it's embarrassing for a company with as much history and legacy as Ferrari to be bearing those brands on their car.
Yeah, and with vaping being the new kind of in thing or the new type of smoking, the way they're trying to brand it and transition into making it, oh, it's safer, it's okay.
Yeah.
This is it, all it is. It's smoking just in a newer technology type fashion. So
absolutely. And I think the scary thing is, I think youth growing up now see smoking traditional tobacco products as dirty and uncool, but this is seen as clean and cool. And I think that's where the danger is. So I think society is beginning to wake up a little bit to what this is and how quickly they were able to make inroads. And no matter what city you're in, you can see the store selling this stuff everywhere, but their primary demo is youth. It's high school students, it's people in their young 20s. And I don't think governments are going to take well to the fact that companies like Ferrari are driving their cars around wearing emblems that are promoting these companies.
Yeah. And whether this is a conscious decision to remove it or a forced decision, you know, it should be gone, and I'm glad that it's gone.
I totally agree, 100%. It's one thing to have Heineken branding on some circuits and things like that. It's a whole nother thing if you've got a tobacco company bearing a brand on their car that is ultimately designed to encourage people to adopt e-cigarettes.
Yeah, and that, just the whole thing around it was a bit sneaky, in my opinion, the way they kind of put it on there, and then people caught on.
Yeah, exactly. Because originally, we talked about this at the beginning of the season, people were wondering, what the hell is Mission Winnow, right? And McLaren's got something similar on their cars. But when you dig in, really, ultimately, it's a tobacco company that owns a pseudo company called Mission Winnow, but their real motivation is just to help with the transition of people going from tobacco products to e-cigarettes. So yeah, I like that. That's a good way to put it. It was really just them being sneaky and a little bit nefarious, and people just caught on and governments caught on, and hopefully it'll be stripped from their cars. And maybe it's a financial penalty for Ferrari because they're not going to be able to collect those dollars, but that's a them problem. Yeah. I like that you roll your eyes there. That's awesome. I think maybe the only other thing, and I almost think we need to have a dedicated podcast to talk about this, but a couple of days ago, Formula One, FIA in collaboration Formula One released a statement, and I'm going to read this and then give everyone a little bit of context to what it's about, but they released the following statement, and I quote, "While the FIA Formula One World Championship's key stakeholders feel the core objectives outlined for the future set of regulations have been defined, in the interests of the sport, it was agreed that the best outcome will be achieved by using the extra time for further refinement and additional consultation, ... A series of additional meetings will be held over the coming months." So to give everyone a little bit of context, Formula One, since the takeover by Liberty, have been heavily at work in the background, shaping out the future of the sport. And the future of the sport is being defined by a set of new regulations that are intended to take place in 2021. And the regulations are what define everything from maximum car weight, minimum car weight, the type of fuel used, the size, displacement, and type of the engines, whether they use energy recovery systems, whether they have turbocharger, as well as things like cost controls. Say, hey, you know what, the team, you can only spend so much money in wind tunnels. You can only spend so much time on the track. You can only use so many sets of tires a year. Hey, you know what, we're going to use a unified chassis for the entire circuit, so all the cars have to have the same chassis. So cost control is a big part of these new regulations.
Yeah, these changes are supposed to challenge and regulate, you know, the teams in the sport. So it gives a bit more excitement and a bit more dynamic to every year that comes up.
Yeah, you nailed it. And ultimately, these regulations have been in work for a couple of years. And I think it's really important to understand that the teams that will benefit by the changes in the regulations are going to be the teams that don't win today. So in essence, it'll be every team minus, for the most part, Ferrari and Mercedes. So all of the teams, including Red Bull, are pretty adamant that the sport, I don't want to say it's broken, but it's damaged in a way that eliminates all sense of competitiveness. We've been talking since the beginning of the season about, with the exception of a few Verstappen breakthroughs when he's managed to get on the podium, the only two teams that compete week in, week out are Mercedes and Ferrari. The rest of the field is like, look, if we're going to spend hundreds of millions of dollars every year fielding a team, we damn well deserve the right to be able to be competitive and compete for championships. The current structure and the current regulations, though, are such that Ferrari and Mercedes can, for the most part, spend infinite resources on building their cars. So if I'm a smaller team and I have a budget, say, theoretically of $100 million a year, it might seem like a lot of people. I've got 300 or 400 people at my factory. I'm buying engines from Mercedes. I'm building my own gearbox. I'm building my own chassis, my own wings. But at the same time, McLaren or a Mercedes or a Haas might be able to spend $300 or $500 or $1 billion a year building their car. So I might be putting in $100 million, but I know at the beginning of the season that I'm never going to be able to compete. So what the regulations are really supposed to do is create some additional parity in the sport. And if you look at North American sports like the NFL, the sports have really, really strict salary caps, which are designed to create some parity and make sure that a team based in Green Bay can compete with a team based in New York. In Formula One, they don't have the same cost controls and they don't have the same type of regulations that drive parity. So what we've seen since the beginning of the new era, and the new era is the V6 turbo hybrid era that kicked off in 2014, we've seen, for all intents and purposes, no parity. And I think what you typically see is when you enter a new era of regulations, initially the big spending teams will usually win right out of the gate because they had more resources to get that point. But as the years go on, all the other teams, for the most part, just start to emulate what they're doing. So it creates a little bit more parity. What we've seen is the exact opposite.
But funny enough, it comes down to getting the right team together. When Mercedes adopted that new hybrid era, they just blew away everybody for several years. So, yeah, they've got a bit more money than some of the other teams, but they just, you know, they've adopted this hybrid era and dominated over Ferrari, over Red Bull, that has the money as well to compete in terms of building or adapting to the new regulations. Yet Mercedes had the right team, had the right technology, and was able to construct something in that hybrid era that really blew everybody away in several years.
So I totally agree. And if you look back, so Mercedes was born out of the 2010 championship. Was it 2010? 2009 championship. Oh my gosh, Braun team. So yes. The Braun team was kind of the leftovers of the Honda team. They shoved a Mercedes engine in that car. They won the driver's title. They won the constructor's title. It's fantastic. 2010, 11, 12, 13, Red Bull won. Great run for them. But during those years when McLaren were building their team, they weren't building to win in that current iteration. They were planning to build for the new regulations, which were 2014. So they spent a ton of time and energy building for the future, kind of which is what Racing Point's doing today, as Tim Haraney spoke to. But I think you've got to agree that their success was based as much on the fact that they were better prepared than everyone else for 2014, which is why they dominated 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. But at the same time, I think the issue is that while all these other teams have now had 4 or 5 years to emulate what they're doing to try and play catch up a little bit, Mercedes just has so many resources that for every step forward that maybe a McLaren or a Williams or a Haas takes, Mercedes can take 5 steps. And I think Ferrari has the resources that Mercedes does, and they have the ability to do what they do. There's just some general incompetence and some leadership and strategic issues there. But I think you have to agree, right? Like I would love to be able to see Haas compete for a podium, or that Williams competes for a podium, or that Racing Point competes for a podium, because it just creates more excitement.
Or Williams. Sorry, so sorry.
Well, I would love to see it, right? Yeah. Like they had that really lucky podium Shout out to Lance Stroll in 2017, but before that, it was years since they'd had a podium at all. But we know every single weekend now, and it's become a running joke that every single week this year, every single race weekend this year, it's finished a Mercedes 1-2. Yeah. Every single one of them, which is, well, actually maybe every one of them, but two or one, but every single weekend you have both Mercedes on the podium, which is getting a little bit stale. So the sport, all of the teams minus Mercedes and Ferrari are pushing for some big regulation changes. They want to see standardized parts. So they want to say, look, everyone's going to use, as an example, everyone uses the same gearbox. So Ferrari, Mercedes, every single team, we all just go and buy it from a dedicated supplier. Again, as an example, that way, if I'm Williams, I don't have to spend a ton of money I don't have building a gearbox while McLaren or while Mercedes can build one that's 10 times better because they have 10 times more money. We have a standardized part. They would love to see things where, hey, maybe everybody has a standard chassis, which is what we see in Indy. That way, these cars don't have to spend hundreds of millions of dollars or euros developing a unique chassis. They want to see more standard regulation around wings and body parts and floors and end plates and all those kind of pieces, wheels and brakes. So that's what they want to see. They want to see more standardization that creates more cost certainty, which will create a little bit more parity. The two teams that don't want to see changes are who?
Ferrari and Mercedes. And of course, because they're already leading or dominating, they've got the money, but they're already in a good position. So why would they follow suit with everybody else and start from scratch when they can just continuously build on what they have now?
100%. What motivation does Mercedes and Ferrari have for sweeping regulation changes? Because the only two teams that wouldn't benefit in that scenario are Mercedes and Ferrari. So these other eight teams are like, we need to do this for the health of the sport. So what was supposed to happen was this summer, the new regulations were supposed to be posted. Okay, this is officially what's going to happen in 2021 after next season. Next season will become something of a lame duck season because no one's going to invest a lot of energy into those cars because they're all going to be focused on 2021. But what was understood was that there are kind of a framework of regulations that are done and ready to go for 2021. They were supposed to be formalized and put on paper this summer. And what the statement I read at the beginning of this segment spoke to was the fact that, hey, look, there was an emergency summit with the Formula One teams, a bunch of drivers, and the FIA officials. They all got together. They can't agree on the regulations. 8 of the 10 teams are pretty much ready to go. Like, hey, we're ready to go. It's understood that Ferraris and Mercedes are like, no, 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 no. So they've paused. They've said, look, we're going to hold off on announcing the regulations until October. What the smaller teams are afraid of now is that with that added time, it's going to give Ferrari and Mercedes more time to soften those changes so they can lobby, they can push. We'll only agree if we make these changes. So these smaller teams are like, no, we're ready to go now. We like the proposed changes. Ferrari and Mercedes are like, we don't. We need some more time to fight back a little bit.
Yeah, so with the new regulation draft, Mercedes didn't sign off on it. Ferrari, I think they were like, okay, well, we don't like the changes, and you know, the Formula One is not anything without Ferrari.
Yep, so totally.
if we're not in it, then you know, you've got nothing, right?
Yep.
So you need to bend to our will.
Yep.
That way we can still continue on.
Totally. And for those of you that don't know, and this is kind of an ancient architect, or not architect, ancient artifact of the sport. But at one point, the leadership of Formula One had given Ferrari a veto, so they can effectively veto anything that they don't believe is in the interest of the Ferrari team. So even if all of the other teams were on board, Ferrari effectively has the power to veto those changes. So you've really got to lobby Ferrari. And then Ferrari consistently has said over the years, like, hey, look, we don't need you as much as you need us, which is probably a lie because their entire heritage is based on motorsports and they sell cars based on the fact that they have a Formula One presence, but they're always threatening that they'll walk away. Mercedes at the same time isn't contractually obligated to even compete after next year. So maybe they don't come back at all if the rules aren't to their liking. So the sport's in this really interesting position right now where there's this deadlock where a bunch of teams are ready to go. We like the regulations. And a couple of teams are like, no, we don't want any part of this. We want to continue having our dominance. But if they continue to dominate the way they do, you can imagine a future where, say, a team that isn't a B team like a Toro Rosso or an Alfa Romeo, but it's kind of a dedicated standalone team like a McLaren or a Williams or a Haas, maybe they just leave the sport because we can't compete and we just don't want to spend the money anymore.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you got one side, the Formula One sport itself needs to change or evolve or elevate. So these regulations are definitely to benefit the teams, yet solely the teams themselves don't want to spend the money or don't have the money to spend. Yeah. So that's the other side of the fence where Ferrari and Mercedes have the money, but to wipe the slate clean and to start from scratch because of the changes in Formula One and the sport where the other teams don't have the money and then everyone's on the same playing field if they wipe the slate and build up from scratch again. So I think with if they want to continue the sport, they need to wipe the slate clean and give the fans, give the sport what it needs, as opposed to solely looking at the individual teams and saying, hey, you know, your Ferrari or your Mercedes, the sport is nothing without you, which I don't believe the case. If
I agree.
There was no Mercedes or no Ferrari, then we're looking at a competitive rest of the other teams that are willing to work within the regulations. And, you know, maybe Red Bull again is now the top tier team. McLaren is now the top tier team, right?
I couldn't have said it any better. You absolutely nailed it. And you know what? Maybe you really simplify the regulation so you have a simpler engine configuration. Like, hey, look, you know what? We're not going to do these crazy 1.6 liter turbo V6 hybrids. We're just going to go to a standard 3 liter V8. It's going to be the same engine across the series. It's more simplified. Maybe you attract other companies to the sport. And one of the things that was highly speculated is that as we were going down this path of engine evaluation, as we were going down this path of kind of mapping out the regulations for 2021, a lot of other companies that don't currently compete in Formula One were initially a part of this. Aston Martin was sniffing around, Porsche was sniffing around, and a number of Japanese manufacturers were sniffing around as well, including one or two that actually built a spec engine based on the proposed regulations. They were all very interested, but they wanted to join the sport, and it's not a secret that Porsche was very, very curious about joining Formula One, and having them on the grid would have been phenomenal. But ultimately, even the regulations that have been proposed weren't simplified enough for them. So they're like, look, we're an outsider. Like, we want to join. We're curious. But even the proposed regulations probably don't generate enough parity. So we'd be sinking a ton of money and not competing even then.
Yeah. And you look at this season where we lost a team, like who knows that maybe if the changes come are fair, that we get teams like Marussia coming back, we get Lotus coming back, you know?
Yep. And that's the other thing too, is if you're new to the sport, you're probably just condition of the fact that there's 20 drivers and 10 teams. That hasn't always been the way. As recently as a couple of years ago, we had 12 teams and 24 cars on the grid. Like, 10 teams isn't great. We really need 11, 12, 13, 14 teams. In fact, Formula One was once at a point in its history where not every driver and not every team would even qualify for the race weekend. So many teams would come to the race weekend just to have the opportunity to qualify. Now everybody qualifies. It's more just about qualifying position, but we won't know the regulations now until October. I know a lot of information and things will kind of sneak out. A lot of stuff will be leaked, so we'll continue to monitor that. But that's really exciting for us. So if I'm Hamilton now, I've pretty much all but locked up the driver's title this year. So that's my sixth. That would put me one away from Schumacher. Next year, teams like McLaren and Red Bull and Racing Point and Haas probably aren't going to spend a ton of money on that car, because at this point, they're probably all getting ready for 2021. And once those regulations come out, all their money is going to go towards the 2021 car. So if I'm Hamilton, I'm looking at this year, lock down this title, lock down next year, and I'm tied with Michael Schumacher. So I think Hamilton is going to be going crazy for the next 18 months as he tries to lock up another two drivers' titles.
Agreed.
Yeah. So again, I didn't want to make this a huge segment. It kind of became one, but that's kind of a little bit of news and gossip this week. So you know what? Including France, I think we've got a crazy like 5 races in 7 or 8 weeks before the break. Right. So it's going to be F1 crazy as they race around continental Europe, hitting all of those tracks. Any other thoughts or anything before we go? We should probably give an update on current standings.
Yeah, so I think we should just finish off with the current standings. So driver standings, we've got Hamilton with 187 points. We've got Bottas with 151 points. We've got Vettel with 111. Surprisingly, with everything that's been going on with Vettel, that he's third with 111.
But like you said earlier, because we talked about this, I was saying, I can't believe Leclerc isn't third in the championship. And you reminded me about the kind of the team orders and some of the stuff that's gone down at Ferrari that's kind of stolen away some points from Leclerc.
Definitely. We've got Max Verstappen at 100.
Great job.
Yeah. We've got Leclerc at 87. It should be more, but he's got 87 points.
Yep.
Gasly, surprisingly, 36 points.
Wow.
We've got Sainz with 26 points. Daniel Ricciardo, 22. So I'm surprised at that, when he's got 22 points.
Yeah, now these standings, I believe, were before the just announced penalties. So the points could be a little bit different here, but still, yeah, it's kind of surprising. But he's had a couple of DNFs this year, which have definitely hampered his ability to kind of hauling some points.
Yeah, we've got Raikkonen with 17 points. He's been very overshadowed this season.
I agree.
He's a great driver. He wanted to be with Alfa Romeo.
Yep.
I just think that the car that he's got just is not working for him.
Yeah.
He could easily, if McLaren drivers are up higher in position, I'm just surprised not to see Raikkonen up there in a higher position.
But, you know, like we said earlier, you look at him versus his teammate, Giovinazzi. Like, he's hauling in points, and he finished seventh today. Like, he's having a good year, but it just speaks to what his current capabilities are. And if he was on a team like a Mercedes or Ferrari and there's no team orders, maybe he's competing for a championship. If he was on Mercedes, like, I think he would be outperforming what Bottas is doing this year. And yeah, that's the other thing too. What happened to Bottas 2.0? Yeah. He came out of the gate so hot this year. It's like he's going to compete with Hamilton for a title. He's just disappeared.
Yeah.
I mean, he's still second in the championship, but as a competitor to Hamilton, he's just kind of faded out.
Yeah, we'll see what happens for the second half of the season after the break. So we've got next Magnussen at 14 points. We've got Hülkenberg also at 14 points. Lando Norris with 13. Perez with 13. We got Kvyat with 10 points. Albon with 7. Stroll, as disappointing as it is, he's got 6 points.
Yeah.
And then we've got Grosjean with 2 points with all the issues that we talked about that he's had this first half of the season.
And then Russell, Kubica, and Giovinazzi, 0 points year to date. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And just the top 6
constructors,
we've got Mercedes at a whopping 338 points. And Ferrari with 198 points.
Wow.
Like, look at the gap difference between Mercedes and Ferrari. Like, Ferrari's got to get both drivers on podiums, like, for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
They definitely need to.
Yep.
We've got Red Bull with 136 points. We've got McLaren with 39 points. Renault with 36. And then Racing Point with 19.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So we have a couple of days off, and all of the teams are going to regroup on Wednesday in Austria for the Austrian Grand Prix, which is next weekend. So I believe this is the first back-to-back race weekend of the year, and there's going to be a bunch more coming up pretty quickly. But we head off to Austria for the Austrian Grand Prix next weekend. So we'll obviously be back next Monday, with a recap of the Austrian Grand Prix. And then 2 weeks after that, we're heading to Silverstone in England for the British Grand Prix. After that, we have the German Grand Prix and the Hungary Grand Prix. And then we have almost a month off before the Belgian Grand Prix. So, yeah, just, I guess, 1, 2, 3, 4 races before the summer break. It's season's moving pretty quick.
Yeah, really quick.
Okay, cool, man. Anything else? I think we covered a lot. Boring race weekend. Mercedes dominates. Hamilton dominates. He continues to pad his championship lead. Any other thoughts before we bounce?
No, I think we're just going to keep updating our listeners on current news and facts about the regulations, about any sort of penalties or changes in vehicle aerodynamics or any sort of parts of that technology.
Hopefully we don't see too many more penalties the rest of the way. And hopefully as part of the regulations and again, we talk about the regulations, it's all about making the cars more competitive. They got to do something about the rules as well, just to encourage these drivers to take some risks and do some more exciting stuff on track. Okay, man, I think that's all I got. I'm ready to bounce out of here.
All right,
cool. Peace.
Peace.
Thanks everyone for joining us. You have been a great audience. This is Sarah signing off at Flash F1 with Gil and Mark. Thanks for listening. Join us next time as we recap the Austrian Grand Prix.